Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 11, Chapter 21. Dex walked into La Retro around 3 in the morning local time. The place was its usual calm oasis at that time of night, and Dex walked past the other two tables of patrons as he made his way to where Rene Biagini was flirting with the staff. He slid into the molded metal seat across from his friend and waited for the floor show to be over. "Dex," Biagini said, extending his hands for a double-fisted shake. "It's good to see you again. You said that Miss Annabelle will be joining us also." He raised an eyebrow. "To what do I owe the unexpected pleasure?" "I don't rightly know, Renee," Dex said. "Something's up. She dropped by my place earlier today, unannounced, and when I talked to her just now, she wouldn't tell me anything." He poked at the table's menu with a finger to order a drink and continued, "I think whatever it is, she wants to talk about it in person." "In person?" Biagini said. "How odd. What did she say when she dropped in?" "Ah," Dex said, and he felt his face color. "We didn't actually get to that." His voice faded as a roguish grin spread on Biagini's face. "Well done, you old dog," Biagini said, eyebrows waggling. Dex sighed. "Sadly, no," he said, and briefly explained about Max and Annabelle's visit. "You are a fool," Biagini said mercilessly. "I know," Dex said and smiled at his friend, "but somehow she's still putting up with me." "You don't deserve her," Biagini said harshly, then smiled to take the sting out of his words. "You're a lucky bastard, that's what you are." As he was finishing the thought, Annabelle walked up to the table. Both Dex and Biagini stood, Dex giving her a short but very sincere kiss on the cheek. Annabelle turned to Biagini and extended her hand. "It's good to finally meet you, Renee," she said, allowing him to pull her hand up to his lips. "Likewise, Miss Lewis," Biagini said, only a hint of smarminess in his voice. "Please," Annabelle said, extricating her hand from his grasp. "Call me Annabelle." She sat, and the men followed her lead. "So, what's going on?" Dex asked, getting down to business. "This is going to sound kind of crazy," Annabelle said, looking between the two men, "but I think it's possible that our communications are being monitored." "What?" both Biagini and Dex exclaimed. I know," Annabelle said, her hands up in front of her defensively. "It sounds ridiculous, and I can't be sure. I'm just trying to play it safe, because that's not what I wanted to tell you." She paused for effect, and both men leaned in toward her. "Well," Biagini said, unable to wait. "What is it already?" "It's the firms," Annabelle said with an air of finality. Dex and Biagini looked back and forth at each other in confusion. Eventually, Dex said, "What do you mean? What about the firms?" "The vandalism in M City, the attacks on Stella Bish, all the problems we've been seeing online," Annabelle said. "It's the EverywhereNet consortium itself that's behind it all." The server brought a tray of drinks and seemed a tad confused as she set them on the table, and Biagini didn't even seem to notice. The waiter left the three alone in their stunned silence, and only after she was back behind the bar did anyone speak. "Are you sure?" Biagini asked Annabelle. She nodded earnestly. "I'm sure. I was convinced it was some clever spoof and spent a couple of days looking for how they did it. Eventually, I wondered if it was possible that the actual admins were making these things happen. Once I started working from that hypothesis, everything started to fall into place." She took a sip from her tea and put her cup back in its saucer. "They weren't even trying to hide it," she continued. "Maybe they didn't think anyone would be able to get that far into the code, or maybe they just don't care. But it's definitely an admin, and it seems to me like it's not just one person doing it. I've found enough heterogeneity to suggest multiple authors. But the admin timestamps are all there, and when you look at the targets, it all starts to make sense." She looked between Dex and Biagini expectantly. "Well, maybe it makes sense to you," Dex said. "I'm not convinced that I even understood half of what you just said there. Renee?" He looked at his friend, who just shook his head in dismay. Annabelle smiled and said, "Okay, I'll try it in English. I'm sure that the vandalism was caused by someone who's an administrator with the EverywhereNet Consortium, and I think it might not just be one rogue person. So that makes me think that what's going on is authorized by the consortium. So it must be the firms who make up the consortium who are behind it all. And when you notice that all the targets are freelancers, people who are making a living without adding anything to the firm's balance sheets, it starts to make sense." "Shit, you might be onto something," Dex said, realization dawning on his face. "Remember what Stella Bish said? Something about... who was it again? Sonera? Anyway, some firm was trying to get a few of her people to come work for them. It's crazy, but there is a kind of point to it."
"There is?"
Biagini asked. Dex nodded.
"Sure," he said. "They're trying to get rid of the competition, on a grand scale."
They talked about Annabelle's revelation for an hour, until Biagini was nearly falling asleep in his soup. He took his leave, and Annabelle and Dex were left alone at the table.
"So what do we do now?" Dex asked.
"Follow Renee's lead, I guess," Annabelle said.
"Huh?"
"Go home," she said, grinning. "Let's go get some sleep." She stood and took Dex's hand. They walked to the train stop, and in a half hour were falling into her large bed. The next day, Dex woke first and padded around Annabelle's apartment quietly. He went online and saw that he'd gotten a message from Desdemona Ashel. He filed it under non-urgent. Annabelle had solved the case, even though he had no idea what to do about it. He was trying to think through what to say in the report he'd have to send to Reverend Alford when he heard Annabelle stirring. He slipped back into bed and snuggled up behind her as she woke. "Morning, beautiful," he said.
"Morning yourself," she answered.
"What were you up to over there?" she asked.
"Just trying to figure out what to tell the Light of the Simulacrum people."
"What do you mean?" Annabelle asked, waking up more clearly now.
"Well," Dex said, rolling over and looking up at her, "we know who's responsible for their troubles now. We just don't know what to do about it."
Annabelle frowned.
"No, we don't know who's behind it," she said. "The Simulacrum thing wasn't the same as the other instances. It wasn't the consortium who wrecked their building."
"It wasn't?"
"No," Annabelle said. "Remember, I told you it was different from all the others. This one is still a mystery."
She got out of bed and walked into the lab. Dex shook his head. He dove back into his messenger and resurrected the message from Desdemona Ashel. He flagged it as something to follow up on and walked into Annabelle's small kitchen. He'd gotten her pot of tea started by the time she was out of the lab.
"So are there any leads in the simulacrum thing?" she asked.
"Maybe," Dex said. "I just have to get back on that horse. I'll probably work it a little bit today before the show at Fred's." She looked at Annabelle. "You still going to come?"
"Of course," she said.
Dex looked away, then back at her. "Max wanted to come too," he said softly.
"That would be fine," Annabelle said.
"No, that would be great. I really ought to get to know him better, don't you think?"
Dex nodded, then said, "I think he was planning on coming to my apartment for the show, not to Fred's."
He waited for Annabelle to answer. He saw her thinking. Then she smiled.
"No reason he can't do both," she said.
Dex smiled at her.
"No, I suppose not," he said.
He stood and walked over to her. He waited for her silent signal that she was willing to have him touch her, then took her in his arms.
"I love you very much," he said into her hair.
"I know," she said. "Now, you better get back to work, and I've got some ideas I want to noodle around myself." She disengaged from his embrace and looked into his eyes. "I'll see you at Fred's, okay?"
"Okay," Dex said.
He'd showered and eaten and was sitting in his comfortable chair within an hour, going through the reports on the critics of the Light of the Simulacrum.
Jay Beck turned out to be telling the truth in their brief interview. The record showed that the religious nut really never had logged into M-City, and definitely couldn't have orchestrated a complex programming job like what was done to the temple. Similarly, Julio Cook and Hillary Kendrick didn't have the necessary skills either, unless they were very shy about using them in public. It seemed unlikely. Kay Barton, on the other hand, seemed to be a bit of an amateur programmer. She might have been able to script up something to bother the temple. She seemed reasonable enough when they'd spoken, but one can never be sure. He flagged her as a possible. Dex sighed and rubbed his face. He seriously wondered about this line of investigation. There were no other leads, but honestly, none of these wackos seemed likely. The owl had the unmistakable aura of loud dogs, all bark and no bite. Dex went back to the list of people who'd been at the temple on the day it was vandalized. He pinged them all, actually reaching Krishna Oblesk, who'd been in the temple from 1801 to 1849 M-City time. He was the last one on the scene before the vandalism, which occurred sometime overnight. "Yes, it's a terrible thing," Oblesk said after Dex explained who he was and what he wanted. "Anything I can do to help, I'm happy to do." "I expect the Reverend has already asked if you happen to take a backup." "Yes," Oblesk said. "I didn't. It's such a shame, knowing that I was the last one to see... But even if I'd known, I couldn't have backed up the whole temple. I don't have the disk space for that sort of thing. I mean, who does?" Dex did, and he wasn't the only one, but he didn't say that. "Did you notice anything unusual about the temple?" he asked instead. "No," Oblesk answered. "It was beautiful, calm, and serene, as always." "You didn't see anyone unusual hanging around outside, either before you entered or after you left?" "No," Oblesk said. "I linked directly into the sanctuary. I didn't see anyone else." "If I may," Dex said, trying for delicacy, "can I ask why you happened to be in the temple that evening?" "Of course," the man answered. "A former colleague of mine opened a little place in Whiteacres, a shop. The interior was being instantiated that night, and I was hoping to watch it." "I don't understand," Dex said. "Why would you go to the temple to watch your friend's shop get built?" "I didn't want to see the shop," Oblesk explained. "Not the counter, the walls, the inventory. I wanted to see the creation of something new. The soul of the new property." "I still don't follow," Dex said. "We have a viewing wall," Oblesk said, as if that explained everything. "A what?" "It's a screen which shows a visual representation of all traffic in M-City. Most of the time you can't tell what anything is specifically, it's just streaks of light in a random chaotic pattern. But something unusual and big, like an instantiation, shows up clearly. It's a beautiful sight, Mr. Dexter, and I was so hoping to be able to see it." "I see," Dex said, making a note to find out what most of that meant. "And did you see your friend's instantiation?" "Sadly, no," Oblesk said. "It was scheduled for 6:15, but I found out from my friend that all the new creations that afternoon got pushed back to the evening. Some kind of glitch in the system, I guess. I missed it by 30 minutes. "So why did you leave?" "I had to go to work," Oblesk said. "And after my friend got the boot, I realized I can't afford to be late. That's why this shop was so important. He decided to try to make a go of it as an independent. Good for him, I say. I don't have the guts for that. But with all the downsizing we've been taking, thanks to Bellis moving in on our routes, I may have little choice." "I see," Dex said, and something niggled in the back of his brain. "Where do you work, Mr. Oblesk?" "I'm a runner for Antover," he said. "We're the shippers in Asia?" "Well, we were, anyway. No one knows what's going to happen now that Bellis is muscling in on our territory." He paused, then said, "I don't see what my employment situation has to do with this." "Neither do I," Dex said. "Thank you for your time." He ended the call and stood. He hadn't learned anything that would help the LOS case, but he finally had an idea about why the firms would be bothered with a few shops and bars in M-City. He logged onto his system and spent the next few hours on some ordinarily very boring boards. Chapter 22 Dex had changed clothes about 6 times before he finally settled on his fanciest casual outfit. A pair of charcoal trousers with a loose-fitting black shirt with a complex pattern of pleats. He stared at his reflection in the mirror and tried to stop caring about how he looked. After all, it wasn't a date. It was just Max and his daughter coming over to watch him play mandolin. He probably wouldn't even notice them once he got going. It was one of the parts of playing music that Dex loved. He lost himself in the minutia of playing, and when he was playing with others, it was even more noticeable. Between his own fingering and keeping up with the other band members, it was like the rest of the universe melted away when he played. He pinged Annabelle to remind her, even though he knew she'd never missed one of his gigs. She told him she was already on her way to Fred's, the M-City bar where Chemical Celeste had played a few times before. "I sent Max the link," Dex said. "I don't know what he wants to do, but I think he might just watch the show from both locations," he explained, referring to his own apartment as well as the online bar. "Good," Annabelle said. "I think I'll just stick to Fred's if you don't mind." She was uncomfortable in Dex's small flat with just the two of them in the room, and Dex was unsurprised that she would not want to be there with two other bodies, regardless of who they were. "I'll see you there, then," Dex said, and they broke the connection. Max arrived at the apartment a half hour before the show was scheduled to begin, with a tall, brown-haired woman. Dex could see the resemblance in her eyes, and he smiled at her. "You must be Andrea," he said, extending a hand. She took it lightly and let Dex squeeze it before he gave it back. "I hope you like music," he said, seeing her shyness and realizing that the daughter didn't necessarily share the same interests as the father. "This could be a pretty dull night if you don't." She smiled slightly, and Max laughed. "Not to worry," he said, shouldering his way through the apartment door. "She's a crackerjack horn player, and I made sure she brought her clarisynth." He gestured to a small box in her hand. He held up a large case and grinned. "And I managed to borrow a real wood guitar from one of the neighbors. Says you all had a little jam in the courtyard last week." He laid the guitar case on the table and sat on the bed. "So, Andy, where's Annabelle?" "She'll be meeting us at Fred's," Dex said. "It's a little cramped in here for her." He shot Max a look, and while the other man didn't acknowledge that he'd seen anything, he dropped the subject. "Tell me, Andrea," Dex said, turning to Max's daughter, "how long have you been here at Liberté?" "About 6 months," she answered, her voice quiet but strong. "I was one of the first tenants." "That's great," Dex said. "You work for Stella Bish, I take it?" Andrea nodded, still not meeting his eyes. "Most of us do," she said. "Do you?" Her eyes darted up to Dex, then veered off the side to look out the window. Dex laughed. "Not usually," he said. Andrea looked confused, so Dex explained briefly about his work for the cubicle man. His system pinged then, a reminder to make sure that he was set up to pipe the sound from his mandolin into his avatar in M-City. He made a quick check of all the equipment, then sat in his chair, mandolin on his lap. "There's rum in the cupboard," Dex said, "and a bit of ginger pop. Help yourselves, just don't bump into me while I'm playing, okay?" He grinned at his two guests. "I'm going to link into the bar," Andrea said, and Max nodded. "I'll come too," he said, "but I probably won't be paying attention there. You know how I am," he said to his daughter, and she laughed. "I do," she said. She looked at Dex and said, "See you on the other side. Have a good show." "Thanks," Dex said, and linked into M-City himself. Fred's was a small space, but it had capacity for hundreds of avatars to watch the show. Virtual spaces have some advantages over physical ones. Everyone can have front-row seats in a virtual club if they want, the system filling your view of the other tables with all the avatars who are really invisibly sharing your own table. It was a fine system, except that for the performers, it made finding friends among the crowd a little challenging. Luckily, pinging an individual in the room would instantiate and highlight the avatar, which is what Dex did in order to find Annabelle. She materialized at the front and center table, along with Max and Andrea. "This should be a good night," Dex said, grinning at the table full of people. "You expecting Zizou?" he asked Annabelle. She nodded. The captain rarely missed one of Chemical Celeste's performances. "I'm going to want to speak to her about that issue we were talking about earlier," she said, still not wanting to speak openly about what she'd discovered about the vandalism in M-City. Dex nodded while Max and Andrea shared a confused look. Dex turned to them and said apologetically, "Work. But that can wait. We're just about to go on, so I better get ready." He walked up to the small stage and greeted Javier, the keyboardist and unofficial band leader. "Susie and Arvind are just getting set up," Javier said. "We're just waiting on Candace." As he said this, a tiny whirlwind of a woman appeared in the middle of the stage. "Sorry I'm late," Candace said, opening her small case and setting it on the mixer stand. "I'm ready to go, though." "Good," Javier said. "I think they're ready, too." He gestured at the assembled crowd of avatars sharing tables and standing room space in the bar. After a few more moments for the five of them to get ready, Arvind clicked his drumsticks together four times, and they launched into the opening bars of their first song. Partway through the first set, Dex noticed Zahara Zhang join Annabelle and the others. He quickly lost focus on his friends, though, and spent the rest of the time engrossed in the music. After the show was over, he chatted with his bandmates for a moment, then made his way over to the table. "Not bad for an old gumshoe," Zizou said, a wide grin on her face. "You all are just getting better and better every time I see you." "Thanks," Dex said shyly. "You're piping in the sound from a physical instrument, aren't you?" she asked, and Dex nodded. Sounds great, she said. And now introduce me to your new friends here, she said, indicating Max and Andrea. This is Maxime Voronin, Dex said. Max is actually my oldest friend. We just reconnected recently. Nice to meet you, Max said, shaking the captain's hand. You're Andy's boss, is that right? I guess you could call me that, couldn't you, Andy? Zhang emphasized the unfamiliar name and raised an eyebrow while looking pointedly at Dex. He shrugged and grinned. You know how it is, he said. You can't teach old friends new tricks. The captain nodded and turned back to Max. And the lady? This is my daughter, Max said proudly, and Dex noted that the captain kept any look of surprise off her face. Andrea Voronin. Andrea shook hands with the captain and said, It's nice to meet you. Mr. Dexter is the first independent investigator I've ever met, and now I'm getting to meet a captain. It must be very interesting work. It is, Zhang said without elaborating. It certainly is. She stood and turned to take in everyone at the table. And it never ends, either. So I must be going. Dex, Annabelle, I'll see you both at the squad meeting. Mr. and Ms. Voronin, it was lovely to meet you both. I'm always happy to see that my people have more to their lives than the work. She turned to Dex. However, work is always there in the background, looming its ugly head. We'll have to talk more about what Lewis told me. I'll be in touch. Dex nodded as Zhang stood, walked to the door of the bar, and disappeared from view. What a lovely woman, Andrea commented. She can be damn tough when she wants to be, Dex said. Indeed, Annabelle agreed, and while Dex noted a sour trace in her words, the others seemed oblivious. So, Annabelle, Max said, turning to her, are you going to be joining us out there for a little more music and merriment? He grinned disarmingly. Not tonight, Annabelle said equally genially. I still have some work to do on a little project. She looked at Dex significantly and he nodded. It was a lovely evening, she said to Max and Andrea. I'm sure we'll meet again soon. She stood and kissed Dex quickly. I'll talk to you later, she said. Is everything okay? He asked. She shook her head almost imperceptibly, but said, Fine, nothing that can't wait. Go have fun and I'll contact you. She put her hand on his shoulder, squeezed quickly, then winked out of the bar. Dex turned to Max and Andrea with a somewhat silly grin on his face. Shall we? He asked, and vanished from the bar. Back at the apartment, Dex stretched, used the lav, and drank a glass of water. The 2 hours he'd been playing had fled past with him barely noticing, but his body betrayed the time he spent in the chair. After he was feeling more ambulatory, he poured a glass of rum and water, then sat back down. He took up his mandolin and began to pick out a tune. Soon, Max started to smile, and he pulled the guitar up on his lap. After a moment, he started following along with Dex's lead. Andrea let the two men play for a while before bringing her clarisynth up to her lips and finding the melody with the electronically tuned horn. They played without speaking for several hours, each of them alternately taking up the mantle of leader. Every once in a while, one would drop out for a moment to use the lav, get another drink, or just sit and listen. The sun was high in the sky by the time they finally played the last song, and Max and Andrea rose to leave. That was a really good time, Andrea said, still having a hard time meeting Dex's eyes. I haven't played with anyone since I got here, she admitted. You know, there's a bunch of musicians in the complex, Dex said. Sometimes we get together in the courtyard, usually whenever there's a party. Check the boards. I will, Andrea said, smiling shyly. Yes, I think I will. She glanced at her father, then made some excuse to head back to her apartment without him. Dex watched Max smiling after her as she spiraled down to the lobby. When she had gone, Max turned to Dex. I'm so glad we ran into each other again, he said. Not just for me, but for Andrea. I think she's been having a hard time adjusting to independent life. Dex frowned. Why would that be? He asked. I mean, she grew up independent, didn't she? Sure, Max said. But like father, like daughter. She wanted to see what real life was like. He drew air quotes around the words real life and rolled his eyes for emphasis. Unsurprisingly, it didn't suit. But living on her own hasn't been easy either. She always had me around before, and I guess I was enough to keep her amused. He looked serious. She's never been very good at making friends. I was always bringing people by or involved in some scheme or another. I never realized how much she relied on that until she moved out here. Dex nodded. I thought there was something familiar about her, he said, and Max looked confused. I saw a lot of myself in her, Dex explained, and Max smiled. You seem to be doing just fine, Max said. That's a relatively new phenomenon, Dex said. If you'd seen me a few years back, you wouldn't think things were going so well. I'd have made Andrea look like the life of the party. Max shook his head. Well, I don't think that's ever what she will be, he said, a trace of sadness in his voice. She didn't get that from me anyway. But I think knowing a few people here will help her out, especially Annabelle. Annabelle? Dex asked. Sure, Max said. They're in the same industry, and I don't know if you've noticed, but my Andrea is a lot happier online than she is out here. Dex gawped at Max. How did you know that Annabelle... His voice trailed off. Max smiled. Some things are pretty obvious, he said. Your lady makes her preferences pretty clear. Dex shook his head. You are something, Max, he said, and his friend grinned. You know it, boyo, he said, then leaned in to give Dex a close embrace. I'll see you again before I leave, he said into Dex's shoulder. Take care, old man. You too, Max, Dex said, pulling away from his friend's arms. He watched Max walk down the hall, and only closed the door long after he'd seen his old friend disappear down the spiral. You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.